Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Polaroid sunglasses, what you can see with them, and what you can see and feel with them if you understand some of the maths behind it. And I'm going to give an introduction to some of the things, the beautiful things you can see with it, and then go into sort of the more view of, you know, what understanding mathematics, stars, and that type of stuff, and get into the real feel and joy of having Polaroid sunglasses. A little bit before that, I suppose I'll explain about how I'll eventually get some and move forward. So what are some of the things? If you put on a pair of Polaroid sunglasses, everyone sort of knows that it's less, you get less light bounced off a car. So you're driving along, there's less glare. You're looking at a pond, you see the light reflected off. And so indeed, what's happening is that there's light coming in from around. It's unpolarized. And the light bouncing off the water tends to be polarized in one direction. So if you've got your Polaroid sunglasses, they'll cut it off. We'll get into exactly what's happening there. So there's a general thing, and it looks cool, and you realize you pay so much money for good-looking sunglasses and cheap sunglasses and UV protection. Pay a bit more for Polaroid sunglasses, and yeah, it's a sort of a fashion statement and stuff. And I think most people leave it there. But I want to actually go a little bit deeper to it. I think one of the most enchanting thing about Polaroid sunglasses is that if you wear them, the rainbows, which is sort of like a sign of hope and sort of joy, and the phenomena that you see there, the colouring, the factors of it. So in general, to see a rainbow, you have the sun shining at your back, and you look out with your shadow in front of you, and you look out, and you can see an arch. I think 37 degrees, something like that. Be 37 degrees, going fully around, based on an axis from the sun, in actual fact. So if the sun's where the compass needle hits, and the rainbow arcs across, and in general there's rain falling or mist falling ahead. You can see it. Sometimes you can see a rainbow, say if you've got a squirting bottle, you're spraying the garden or things like that. There's many cases where you can see a hose pipe's burst, and it's got these tiny little droplets here, and that's a rainbow. Now, with the Polaroid sunglasses, the beautiful thing is that the Polaroid sunglasses, they cut out roughly 50% of the light. So most of the light is dark, but it has no effect on the rainbow. So the beautiful thing is that if you're looking at a rainbow, the rainbow is twice as bright if you're wearing shades. Now, there is a saying, I'll talk about this in a little while, the future is so bright I have to wear shades, and that's the motto of the Glenbrook Advanced Concept Institute. We'll give a little bit of a talk about that and sort of how, I bought some glasses and I said, I really would like some Polaroid sunglasses. So this is the great thing, is that often people, it's a bit gloomy, a bit of storms come, there's that sort of quiet, and often if there's a rainbow, it's often the area around you, it's recently rained, and it's sometimes hot, and it's never very windy, I find, with rainbows. Sometimes there's these beautiful things, and if the water droplets are pretty much the same size, in actual fact, you can see a second rainbow, and the second rainbow is the reverse of the colours, Roy G. Biv. So the red light gets reflected the most, the blue the least refracted as it comes across these little water droplets. So the light enters a water droplet, and it goes, and as it enters is refraction, so it bends in the greater refractive index, hits something, gets totally internally reflected, and then hitting the back of the water droplet, it then bends around, comes back, that's a beautiful phenomenon. Now, just looking at the rainbow. Again, if you have your glasses, your Polaroid sunglasses, and you take it off your face and you rotate it through 90 degrees, besides from turning the rainbow twice as bright, you can switch off the rainbow completely. Now, for me, I think there's a lot of people in the world who live and switch off their rainbows. And I'm going to go a bit deeper than that. Now, if you study the maths, you then realise that filling in from the rainbow, from the arch going down, it's not just clear, it's actually a white cloud. It's something called Mie scattering, M-I-E scattering. And there's a bit of science under that. And we'll start to go in saying that my journey to see that wasn't, I didn't see it straight away. So underneath the rainbow sits on a white cloud. And you'll have to believe it, and probably go on the internet, and you'll see it. You'll see this white cloud. You see it a lot better with Polaroid sunglasses. So Polaroid sunglasses allow you to see rainbows twice as much, and you can see this Mie scattering twice as much underneath it. Now, my journey there was a bit of a funny journey. I lay down a crinkly maze-like surface on a glass slide. It was calcium sulfide, and it didn't stick to the glass properly, so where it did stick, it pulled across and formed this very fine linear maze, and that scattered the light, a bit like a rainbow scattering, and reflected it back. And in my spectrometer, it was only numbers. It went up and down, up and down, up and down. I was looking for something, some other phenomena there. I was looking for a band gap. This is to do with electrons and stuff like that within cadmium sulfide's a semiconductor crystals. There's a whole series of stories about what goes in there and why that operates. So when I saw this, I said, oh, that is a rainbow. Now, a lot of people obviously wouldn't scan all the way down there and wouldn't look for these features, but I'd been building optical fiber components. So this is inside your optical fiber. You can actually build these filters inside an optical fiber, and you always scan through and you would look for these various functions, and you try and work out what was going on, put the angle. And so this is a surface function. So I looked on, I found my scattering. And when I found the maths of my scattering, I read it, and then I became attuned to it. So if you want to talk about life, you've got people who don't wear Polaroid sunglasses, people who do and only see what they're told to see. That is, they can use it the way that the product's sold for them. There's people who might see it a little bit and ignore it, and then there's, if you can keep on walking across this range of experience, you have people who can see Mie scattering. And this is a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. And polarization, I might give a bit of a story to it a bit more. But there is more, there is more. If you look around the moon at night, if there's high altitude clouds, and the particles are the same size. So to get Mie scattering rainbows, the important thing is that the particles must be roughly the same size, so the angle of scattering is the same. And you'll get a rainbow around the moon, a fixed number of degrees, 3 to 5 degrees around the moon. Again, people don't see it. I say, oh, can you see that brownish colour, that brown and green and mauve colour? And once you know about Mie scattering, you realise that besides the rainbow, which is light inside a water droplet, Mie scattering, which is this beautiful thing coming along, is sort of, you get these secondary colours, so these mauves and greens, much more subtle stuff. And you say to people, oh, can you see that? Oh, yeah. But then they'll look away from it. They won't be able to see it. And it's that intense feeling. And the important thing is that what they tend to perceive is that they say, oh, you're spectrumy. They don't know any of the maths. They can't see the rainbow. But they sure as hell can, if they've got this prejudice, they get this next prejudice along with them. You're on the spectrum. you've seen that on its spectrum. And then there was this other time just coming through, and so by and by I saw more and more my scattering, and a little thing of putting hot food away in a container before it's ready. Initially you put the lid on, and initially the very first flush of water droplets up produces a mice scattering rainbow, much more intense with with Polaroid sunglasses. And yet again, there was one time which I had sort of immersed yourself in the math. So if you can imagine, there's two paths. There's a path of ignorance and blaming, and what I find about blaming is that it habituates blaming, labeling someone your things. It's a very small step for them to be unkind and cruel. And I do find that people who tend to label people quickly, it's just part of that thing. It's their cruelty in the way they treat others helps them. It eases it means it's far more easy to label them and walk around and be ignorant and miss things. And one of the things that you've got to really say is that people who don't have maths can't predict the future, and they don't feel their lack of maths and inability to predict the future. They don't feel responsible. They feel a lack of ethics due to the lack of knowledge, the lack of effort. And in a complicated term, because they really think to be negligent, you can feel all the things, but it's only if everyone agrees you're negligent that you're negligent. But mathematically, you become negligent once you have the opportunity to understand it, you walk away. So there are these situations where you can see things, say, my scattering, or you can see an oil film, or you can make a deduction about the safety of something, and you can use that and act and save people or change the environment or affect things like this. And there's no feeling that that if you don't bother to do that, you don't bother to take your first step, you take the first step in your journey is, oh, your spectrum, you understand maths, you're blah, you know, they'll keep you down and the organisation will ignore you and stuff like that. There's no sort of feeling that, well, eventually you're going to impact other people's lives if you actually keep on doing that. So this is why wearing Polaroid sunglasses and connecting with it is there. But there is more. I was in the pool one day, a bit stressed. At the pool, you can actually hear our local frog. I haven't put as much chlorine in, and it's the frogs are having a field day in our pool. It has to, you know, economically, it's easier to just leave it, and then recondition it in one hit. So there's frogs having heaps of fun. But I was in the pool myself, and I looked up, and I saw a cloud, and it was the most brilliant example of my scattering. And it was, if you look on the internet, it's my scattering clouds, rainbow clouds, fire clouds. And the explanation you see is it's the hand of God, which is probably another aspect of it. That if you don't understand something, you can be cruel, or you could say it's the hand of God, which allows you to interfere with other people's lives. It's essentially, when you look at a priest, there's very few you don't hear about the contemplative priest. You hear contemplative priests, and their major thing that they do is they stand on pulpits, they put judgment, and their major interfering. They've got a system that they're interfering for good and stuff like that. So if you've got that, you can have label, set and forget, label, set you up there with an authority, or you can understand the maths. And then I saw the my scattering, and then I began to pick out how to watch it. And so most days in the Blue Mountains, depending on the weather patterns, I can look up at around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 3, 4 o'clock after school, driving home, I can look up and I can see the the fringes of freshly formed clouds, beautiful greens and mauves and stuff like that, far more intense if you wear Polaroid sunglasses. So this is a beautiful aspect of it. And so I suppose for me, personally, wearing Polaroid sunglasses, it's sort of a protective thing that you can't stop people's labelling and stuff like that. You can tune them out a little bit and enjoy it. Now, other things with animals, hair, fur, which is basically fingernails, very tubular fingernails. It's the same keratin in your fingernails, keratin in your hair. That has beautiful mice scattering, depending on the health of stuff. So with the Polaroid sunglasses, you can see condition of hair and stuff like that. So it's the all over the place. You can see spider webs, dew, the structure of leaves. You can see the not only the polarized effects, but that going ahead. I can say it keeps on going. And if you look at the maths of it, it goes. Oh, and obviously the other major polarized thing is the sky. So my scattering, if you put the equations all the way through, you get Rayleigh scattering, which is the blueness of the sky. So essentially, as you look at the sun, so the sun in general, most people see the sun, well, the sun's roughly the size of the moon, but when they look at it, it's a huge, big white disk. Now, of course, the white disk is actually mice scattering going through to you. Now, at 90 degrees to the sun, the sky in polarized sunglasses, tends to be black. Depends the purity of the air. If you're in a city, there's a lot more pollutant out there. If you're in the outback, it's absolutely stunning. Sometimes at sea, it's just the most amazing things. And so your sky, which is blue for everyone else, goes from blue to black to blue. And the clouds, why are clouds white? Because they're actually, there's mice scattering inside of them. Now, I want to talk a bit more about clouds and mice scattering and maths and this journey you have. You take, once you understand some maths, and once you have the gentleness to understand maths, a lot of people can say, too tough for me, I think I'll go and bash someone up. So if you decide not to bash someone up, go through and understand the maths, you can go that little extra journey. And of course, it is extremely rewarding. So the clouds themselves are classic examples of mice scattering. And so you can have the back of a cloud, and it can be intense white. Now, there's more to it, even still. These clouds, therefore, can actually have colour. And pilots of old, World War II pilots, glider pilots, can actually read certain colours. So the clouds have got a little greenish tinge or a grey tinge or a reddish tinge. They're different clouds, different things are happening in them, and that's a very intense thing. So your hair is cloud. The most beautiful thing, obviously, I was going to say a woman's skin, but in general, men's skin, they're a bit more crinkly and old. Women's skin and makeup. If you get your makeup, the nanoparticles, the actual nanoparticles can mimic skin. I have to say, white, fair-skinned people, the light enters the skin and scatters and moves out. And so if you fired a laser beam at a person, the laser beam would hit a little red point. Now, if it hit a wall, it would be just a spot, but if it's a person, you get this halo around of this mice scattering halo, and you get the beautiful complexion of people, and it's absolutely fascinating to see. So you get this absolute treat coming along. And now let's go a little bit into the history of polarizers and what happens here. Because the glasses you have are linearly polarized. So the maths of polarized light is it can be vertically, horizontally polarized, or circularly counterclockwise, or circularly clockwise. There's 4 degrees of polarization. How do you map that? Well, you map that pretty much on something called a sphere. So generally what happens, people want to map things on a graph, on a sheet of paper. Unfortunately, here we're up to a bit more advanced maths. It maps on a sphere. So you get the circular polarization on the poles, clockwise on the North Pole, anti-clockwise on the South Pole, and on the equator you have a linear polarization. It's a Poincaré sphere to come across. And so you can get 3 or 4 types of polarizers. You can have horizontal, vertical, circular, clockwise, circular, anti-clockwise one to come across. And so this is sort of a fairly intense thing. So in general, it just gets better and better and better. So you go in, and the first linear polarizers were delivered by Polaroid, Kodak Polaroid, and the idea was that you put Polaroid filters, vertical ones, on all the car headlights, and all the screens, the windscreens, would have horizontal polarization. So what would happen is that the two cross polarizers, and we'll go across, cross polarizers would cross, and it meant that you got rid of all your, you made sure that you had completely vertically polarized light coming at you, and then you filtered out that polarized light, so you could actually wipe out the glare of oncoming headlights. Now, in early days, this was just an unthinkable thing. This was going to be the problem which demanded Polaroid glasses, and it took a while before we filtered this out. And that's the story of it coming across. So your Polaroids stuff like that, and you're going to make heaps and heaps of films. Now, essentially, what light is a beautiful thing. Now, the stuff that you're taught at school is a particle and a wave, and in fact, science communicators who basically get their ideas from school, they say science communicators' creed is what is taught at school is correct. But unfortunately, what is taught at school is woefully incorrect. And so, is light a particle or a wave? Now, really, as far as polarization is concerned, it's very much a wave. But even as a particle, it's only a particle because our universe has got H Planck constant. We've got quantum mechanical generators, quantum mechanical receivers, and that it's got stochastic things off and on energy so much so. And so this is really purely a wave. However, the way that we detect it goes like particles. So you've got all this entire thing, and it makes you weep to come across. And so we should perhaps talk about how light is generated, because light really is an atom's relationship with space. So when light emerges from something, it travels at the speed of light, and then it never experiences time. In fact, time is defined by light. It's one of these beautiful, beautiful things. Now, if I have an atom, and it's got electrons, and electrons will be pulsing back and forth, and will have a local electric field as it pulses back and forth. Why? How it pulses back and forth is the electrons, well, they're not really spinning, because so one of the important things to understand is that school is very, very wrong. The electron is not smaller than the nucleus. The electron is this beautiful marshmallow cloud around the atom. And it doesn't actually physically spin. It has a complex phase which moves around itself. And the phase means that your wave functions have overlap. And so as the phase changes, you can get the actual electron distribution appear to change and oscillate. And it pushes against space. And as it pushes against space, it pushes out into space, and space pushes back, and the atom is this complete relationship of energy, electrons, and space. But you can actually hit that atom, add energy to it, or you can release energy into space. It can change its relationship and actually push. As it's pulsing, it can actually squeeze. Like this, like you tap a piece of music and you can push it out. You can push it out very finely or in a big burst. Depends how it does it. The thing is that the quantum mechanical nature of the universe means that you, even though it can be the smallest of quantity of energy, eventually it will be stochastically, statistically reconstructed as a pulse, as a photon then. But an atom can lose energy to space. Now space, this is one of the more beautiful things, is that as, for an ignorant person, the one thing they can do is that if they don't understand something, they can go out and say, that person who does is socially unacceptable. They've got spectrum. You can bugger off. What happens is that they feel that they have dealt with it, but at no point have they actually understood it. Another thing is that they can go, I have learnt something from my teacher. They have said space has got nothing in it. And of course, that's simply not true. Space has got a springiness, a magnetic springiness, and a electrical springiness, or it's hard to say. There's the fundamental thing is, and you just have to knock over one idea after another idea. And if you're not calm and saying, oh, perhaps what we're teaching our children at school is absolutely destroying their ability to think. One of the most important, the first thing at school you're taught, that space is completely empty. It's void, and of course it's not. It's got this springy like a bed. It's electrically springy and magnetically springy. But the other important thing about light is that everyone is taught that electric field lines go from a positive charge to a negative charge, like that. That is because, quite honestly, the people at university, teachers at university, most probably get into first year university physics. Third year university physics, they don't do too well. And they sort of miss the point of when they've been taught about electric fields, is that, to make it simple, we're going to start off with the case of dealing with electric fields between charges. But there is another type of electric field, which is the other two Maxwell's equations, is where magnetic fields can electric and magnetic fields can form loops. So you're going to get a loop magnetic field. That's stupid. That's crazy. Now, of course, it's not crazy. This loop electric field is in a transformer. I have a loop electric field, and I wind my wire around, and it picks up that electric field around and around and around. I've got a 1 volt per turn, 100 turns, 100 volts per turn. You can actually do it. Now, it means the current goes down, but the voltage goes up. It's very much everywhere. And this is when an atom emits some light, it emits it in this circular sweep of electric field. That electric field, as it goes along, produces a magnetic field. It's called a vector potential when you get into it. And you've got these loops. You've got one donut, and if you can imagine if your fingers grabbed around a donut and actually held through the gap, that other loop is your magnetic field. And as that collapses, it produces yet another a moving electric field. Now, the way that it propagates is that you've got something called a spatially delayed due to light, and it's this propagation forward. So you've got the birthplace of an atom that produces forward, but there is more. There's somehow this produces polarized light, and this really gets back into the universe, and it sort of, I suppose, it gets into a whole lot of things about whether the universe is one thing or the other. You know, do we lose anything? Now, the actual universe is two universes superimposed on each other. It's spin up, spin down universes, and those two universes completely talk to each other. So the spin up part of the sun shines light and hits the spin up part of our place, but the spin up refers to the angular momentum. And the important thing about light and polarization is that a light particle, we'll talk about it, carries a bit of twist to it. That is, you know, the twist you use to open up one of the screw tops of a jam, or the twist that you put on your bike leads to push you forward, is that twist. The light itself has a little bit of twist, and that clockwise or anti-clockwise twist is what that light is carrying. So the light actually loses a bit of angular momentum, travels towards us and puts a bit of angular momentum, actual physical angular kick, actually angular push as well, to go across, and you can actually pick that with the light coming across. So this is one of the beautiful things it doesn't stop there. The journey stops. Your day out in mathematics can stop really quickly if you decide not to step out your front door. But once you start going, you can keep on going and really connect with the whole universe, connect with the sun, connect with nature, and get this great experience from these polarized sunglasses. And of course, if your friends have it, you can sort of talk to them and keep it there. So that's one thing here. So you've got this story here of these two polarizations. Now, I just want to perhaps say this little story that to me, which really said a lot. There's the Science Education Centre in Canberra called Questacon, and I was there when it opened up, and there was the first generation of explainers there, and I was a bit later. So they got the first generation of explainers in there pretty quickly, and I was just a little bit, you know, the Japanese had opened it and stuff like that, and there's heaps of Japanese tourists going there. Everything was new, and they had to actually say, okay, well, you've done so much. What we're going to do is we're going to give you with a qualified explainer, and we're going to test you. Do you understand the various things? And so each exhibit I came to, I would say, well, this is how you'd explain it to a kid, but in actual fact, it's this, blah, blah, blah. And so there was, when I actually explained some of the stuff, I was doing a PhD in this type of stuff. I wish I could say there's the most intense quantum mechanical experience I've had with polarizing, so I might go back to that. But this old chap said, well, let me explain polarizing for you. And it was just complete and utter garbage. And I sort of tried to say, well, to understand polarizing, you need matrix algebra, you need the stuff like that, and to explain. And he said, no, it's not. And I had to, a bit like Galileo, say, or whatever it is, agree and just give a rubbish explanation that he parroted back, which is incorrect, but that sort of really spoke to me. So they didn't really understand polarization. In this case, you had two polarized filters, and you had a piece of perspex between it, and the stress meant that you could turn it across there. I wish I could just describe the beauty of polarization coming through. But it just had to go through. And this said to me that, you know, we can put all this money up here. We can get, it's not something that really affected me, but looking back, you can see all this money up here, all this here, and it's sort of like this, the explanation is just, the individual's explanation is just not enough to get through. And that's been fed to thousands of people, just not enough to get through. I wish I could describe some of the more beautiful aspects. If I can talk about a beautiful experiment I did, which is a Zeeman experiment. What I want to say is that we can see way out into stars. We can look at the lines of the stars, and we can look at the effect of the lines in the stars and read off a whole heap of things. We can see a speck of light, and from that speck of light, we can see planets. From this infinitely a speck of light, in actual fact, just a speck, we can read off the magnetic field, we can chemical composition, we can actually listen to a star, we can hear star quakes. In fact, you can actually tune in and hear the audio of what a star is happening and stuff like that. However, I've got some star gas, helium in a tube, in Melbourne University, and this beautiful thing. You turn up the magnetic field, and the way the atoms pulsating and moving moves apart, and you can see the lines move apart of this atom. You can actually get the atom, which is over top, and you can pull it apart from the magnetic field. And then what you can do is that you can rotate your polarization filter and move it back and forth, and you can see your atom, almost the mathematics, rotate in three dimension as you move it across. That is a spectacular thing. Now, getting back into it, there is this... you've got the two universes, you've got the polarization, circular, clockwise and anti-clockwise, all going down optical fibers. And there is this absolute need to actually pull the clockwise, anti-clockwise, and you can put it through, and you can turn anti-clockwise into clockwise. It's the most fantastic. Fantastic stuff. But the more important thing is that there is this, because you've got light, polarization, magnetic field, you can actually put this crystal, which is a ferrite crystal, in front of an optical fiber and put an intense magnetic field through it. And you can make light going through not time reversible. What that means is that I can send, you know, if I see, you know, Alice, Bruce, and Charlotte. Okay, if Alice can see Bruce can see Alice. But what you can do is that you can put one of these polarization filters and a strong magnetic field, which affects the flow of time in a Faraday rotator, and Alice can see Bruce, but Bruce can only see Charlotte. So I can send light to Bruce, he can process it, send it back down to the same optical fiber, and it can go to Charlotte. This is part of the opening up of the information superhighway. So this is just all this polarization coming through. It's really, really close to understand. I wish I could describe polarization of lasers and how they interact with glass and electrons and the beauty there. Now, this is why I think I'm in the process of, in the unfortunate world of, if you extend the process sufficiently, you can say, oh, this person says the wrong thing. We're not going to give him... he's got to wind up eventually buying his own birthday present. So this is why I want to buy a polarized sunglasses to actually experience again. I used to have polarized sunglasses. They fell apart a long time ago. I want to reconnect with that. And it's sort of in the same statement in terms of you can't really turn away around at the end of so much study and say, by Jove, is there a single thing I can say to you to change your attitudes or to change your view? And the answer is no. You're going to have to actually be gentle, kind, self-doubting, studious, and go on a monk's journey to understand your universe. Otherwise, you can be the opposite of all that and just proceed on buying one thing to the next thing, working on something, throwing it out, not fixing anything, not appreciating anything. So that's the overall story. So I hope this is a little bit of a background for it all. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.